Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage, and tonight we're talking by telephone with Larry Edelman up in Denver, Colorado. The date today is the 17th of November, 2003, and so we're anxious to find out about Larry's life with square dancing. So, Larry, let's start like you usually do and tell me where you're born and brought up and tell me a little bit about life before square dancing.
Well, okay. I was born in Philadelphia June 16th, 1953. Born at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital and grew up early in Philadelphia, and then later on my parents moved to nearby New Jersey, just right across the river, Haddonfield, and then it became Cherry Hill. And I stayed there and went to grade school and went to high school there, and then left home at 18.
Okay. And so how did you get introduced to square dancing way back when?
Well, like a lot of people in my generation, I first square danced in junior high school in gym class.
Okay.
In middle school, and it was the first time the boys' gym and the girls' gym united. It was very exciting for everybody.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember much about the square dancing. I just remember about dancing with the girls,
being
15 years old. And then the next time I square danced, I was 18, and I was a freshman in college and was volunteering for the YMCA, and they got all these volunteers together, and we took a trip to West Virginia for kind of a regional meeting of people who were doing the same kind of volunteer work that I was doing, and they had a fellow there who I don't know in Jackson's Mill, and he called a square dance for us, and I loved it.
You don't remember his name?
You know, I don't remember his name. I had no idea that I would ever end up doing it again after that night.
Right.
Had the time of my life, though. He called with records, which was unusual for West Virginia during that time.
Yes.
That's what I remember.
And that was about what year?
That would have been 1971. Would have been, either late 1971 or early 1972.
Yeah.
And I played music. I ended up playing guitar in old-time music bands, in a square dance band, and we ended up playing for callers.
Okay.
This was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's where I went to school, and so I spent a lot of time in West Virginia and Eastern Ohio and Western Pennsylvania, and I played guitar in a square dance band, and just kind of by osmosis, you know, paid a lot of attention, and so really paid more attention to the dancing from playing music for it and watching it, listening to it, than dancing. And one day, the caller didn't show up, and someone had to call a dance, and I did.
Okay.
I've learned. Now, the callers that I was calling for, there was one fella, Howie Richmond was his name, who lived near Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
He would often play with him. He would fiddle and call at the same time, and that was I think the first caller I ever really played for. And
now, were these true square dances, or were they Appalachian?
This was Appalachian square dance.
Yeah.
Yep. So this was the old style of square dancing. A lot of visiting couple dances.
Yeah.
You know, back then, square dancing meant a lot of things. Unlike today, square dancing meant squares, circles, couple dances.
Right.
So, you did it all.
Did you do running sets?
You know, we did dances that other people might have called running sets. We never called them running sets. You know, and when I've read the collections of, you know, Seth Sharp and Pat Napier and some other people who have, Frank Smith from Berea and other people who, you know, collected the running sets and named them, the accounts varied, but they sure weren't too far apart from what we did. But we never called them running steps. We just called them square dances.
Yes.
So I got calling just by, well, that one time had a call, one dance, waiting for the caller to come. And I called just a visiting couple square dances, birdie in the cage. And because it was just the first thing that came to mind.
Yes.
And then I try one here or there. And then I think that I joined a band. Actually started a band called Devilish Mary in Pittsburgh. And we got to be, you know, where all of us were playing full-time, making a living, just playing old-time square dance music.
Good.
Songs, playing a little Irish music. And we realized that every time we did a gig, we each made $25.
Yeah.
The caller made $75. And we said, what's wrong with this picture? And since I was kind of, you know, interested in calling, and by that time had started dancing too, the old style square dance, I made a deal with a guy in the band that if he would learn how to play guitar and take my place when we did dances, I'd go learn how to call dances.
Right.
So I took that next summer off and just traveled around West Virginia and Western Pennsylvania looking for callers and meeting them. And also went to some dance camps and met some of my peers who were a couple years older than me, guys you would know. I learned from Sandy Bradley.
Okay.
From Seattle. Spent a lot of time with her. I spent time with Bob Dousmer, who had been calling for a few years by then.
Yes.
And Frank Hall from Bloomington, Indiana. And that might have been it.
Okay.
And just started learning, as many traditional squares as I could.
So
early on, I'd never seen or heard of a contra dance.
Okay. Well, did you ever get involved in modern Western?
Well, what happened was I didn't have a lot of square dance caller models, you know. And one of the things, because I was a musician, there wasn't a point for me to call or dance without live music.
Yes.
Because I got into it through the music, and that didn't make sense to me. So I wanted to find dances that were kind of accessible to dancers, and I started collecting books, and I found that the dances that I found that were in the books that were written, from the late 1940s up until the late 1950s, I just loved the dances. And I went out and tried to collect as many 78 records as I could that were recorded then.
Mm-hmm.
And books, and then just tried to reconstruct the dances as best I could without really having a lot of models. And then I'd collect more 78s and then start to get the hang of it. And I started to go to some clubs just to kind of observe. And, you know, I went to one club and they would have nights where anyone was welcome to come.
Yes.
And I'd go to state fairs and county fairs where they'd have, you know, club exhibitions. And
yes.
And I just got very interested in that kind of period that I always called the golden age of square dancing. It was, I was practically a baby then, but I just loved that dancing that was going on in the late 40s and the 50s. I thought it was creative and inventive, and I thought the callers were, that I heard on records were all very skilled, and so. So I probably spent 10 years just trying to learn how to call that style. So this is in, the early to mid-80s that I was trying to call like I was calling in 1954.
Yes.
But I never got into the Western dance. I think, I learned how to call dances that kind of had the figures up until the star through. And I felt that, and when I would call, I ended up, I coordinated a dance week at the Augusta Heritage Workshop. I coordinated their dance week for about 7 years. And so the same dancers would come over and over again. And so they became very good square dancers. And I would learn enough club material to kind of give these dancers a taste for it.
Yes.
These were people who did more traditional dancing, the old style. And I just loved it, but I guess I wasn't much of a club person, and I felt that a dance should be for whoever came that night. And so I tended to find that by the time you get to Square Through and Star Through, it wasn't for all who will anymore. It was for those who, you know, spent a lot of time in clubs together.
Right.
Took lessons and mastered the basics. And so I kind of lost interest after that period. You know, after about 1957, 58, the dances just were such that you had to be a pretty skilled dancer to do it.
Right.
And which was beautiful for the folks I observed, but it just wasn't what I was interested in.
Well, that's interesting. Do you ever do any recording?
Of calling?
Yeah.
Well, just, you know, I do a lot of camps.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Well, I do a lot of camps, and people record me at camps. And
yes.
I, you know, collected a lot of what people send me, but I've never said that. I've recorded a lot of music.
Yes.
I make a lot of recordings of the music that I play, you know, commercially released recordings, but never my calling.
Okay. What are some of the camps that you have been to?
Well, as I mentioned before, I spent a lot of years coordinating and teaching at the Augusta Heritage Arts Dance Week in Elkins, West Virginia.
Yes.
And I've been on staff at Pinewood.
Yeah, I knew that.
And, you know, a lot. I usually teach a square dance callers workshop there every summer.
Yes.
And I've been on staff at a lot of times at Lady of the Lake in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and I've called a lot of the festivals, American Fiddle Tunes up in Port Townsend, Washington, and in the Bay Area, California, both their American Dance Weeks.
How about the Berea?
You know, I've never been to the Berea Winter Week or the other weeks. I've called a dance in Berea before.
Yes.
You know, just there was a period of time in the early 80s that I would just go off on traveling bands.
Yes.
I'd go off with a little band, and we'd do maybe 25 dances in 30 days, you know, just traveling around, driving around the country. And in one of those trips, called in Berea, and got to meet John Ramsey there and some of the folks, but I've never been to the week there.
Well, great. Okay.
And one thing I forgot to mention.
Yes.
You know, at that period in the, around 1984 and 85, when I was really so interested in the older Western dances, the club dances.
Yes.
At that time, though, I was also really interested in as much as I could learn about the traditional Appalachian dances.
Okay.
And I had a friend of mine, a fiddler, who had a small grant from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts to collect the fiddle music of southwestern Pennsylvania. And so I would go with him on his collecting binges, and what I would do is I would ask the fiddlers, hey, do you guys play for square dances? And so I would start going to the square dances that were in very rural areas.
Yes.
This is maybe a, you know, 50-mile radius in every direction of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I ended up unearthing dozens of dances that had been going on, some of them, for 75, 100 years.
Good.
And I videotaped these dances and audiotaped these dances until I ran out of money, and then I wrote a grant to the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts to do an apprenticeship with who I thought was the best caller of that I'd run into. And he was a fellow named Jerry Goodwin, who, when I met him, he was in his mid-70s. And he grew up in Buchanan, West Virginia. And then when he was about 12, moved. His father was worked for Ambridge, the American Bridge Company, and he moved to southwestern Pennsylvania. And then Jerry followed his dad there and lived there, and then Jerry ended up working at Hambridge his whole life. And so Jerry called in the very old style of square dance calling that his dad and his uncle and his brothers called back in Buchanan, West Virginia, and I spent a couple of years making videotapes of Jerry, and I just spent time learning his repertoire and his history and the history of his dances. And so there was that period from about, I guess, 1984 to 1988 that I was videotaping just as many of the old-style callers in Western Pennsylvania that I could find. So I have a wealth of a library.
I was going to say, you must have quite a library.
Well, I do, unfortunately, at the time. Fortunately, at the time, the best video format was 3/4 inch, and now 3/4 inch is all but obsolete.
Yes.
So I have boxes of old 3/4 inch videotapes. I've edited some of them down, but I also have a lot of audio cassettes.
Yeah.
Kind of chronicling the square dancing that was going on in southwestern Pennsylvania during that time, which was very strong. Just, you know, it was just this little pocket.
Yes.
Of amazing dances. I mean, there's one community that still did the Lancers.
Well, I know you've been in contact with Bill Heyman at Supreme Audio.
Yeah.
About your film collection. I'd like to hear a little more about that.
Well, you know, because I play old-time music, and I don't just play music from the South, but I play, you know, Southern Appalachian fiddle music. I'm a fiddler. But I also play a lot of fiddle music from the Midwest. It's a great repertoire of music from the Midwest. I found that sometimes when you would say, oh, I play old-time music, or, oh, I'm a square dance caller, that some people in mainstream America would chuckle and make fun of it, like kind of like, you know,
yes,
considering that you were rube because
yes,
you did this. And I'm thinking to myself, this is amazing. This is beautiful music. It's beautiful dancing. It's primal. It's about people. It celebrates the differences between the sexes. It's flirtatious. It's family-oriented. It's everything you want it to be. And yet some people just make fun of it. And I wanted to find out why they made it, why it was such a stigma. And so I started to look at how Hollywood has portrayed square dancing.
Yes.
So the first thing I started doing was collecting just how Hollywood portrays square dancing. Know in feature films. And then when I started getting very interested in the Western dance, I said, wait, I want real stuff. I want someone who turned on their, you know, their film projector at a dance in Texas in the late 40s.
Yes.
And so I also started collecting as much documentary footage I can, and I just, you know, for a while I was real into it. And then what I would do is I would kind of edit scenes together of both the Hollywood stuff, plus I had a separate collection of television stuff, and then also just more documentary stuff of the real thing. And I'd edit it together, and then when I'd do dance camps, I'd kind of show them, you know, and we'd talk about it. We'd talk about how we dance differently than people. But in particular, we'd talk about why... you know, why Hollywood has kind of made this caricature out of this thing that we love so much. And so, and I still collect, but I'm not quite as passionate about it. That's not because I lost interest in the collecting. It's more that I ran out of time.
Yes.
Life gets busy.
Well, I know a friend of mine back in Connecticut. His name is Alan Brozek. And he collected clips from... various movies, and he put them all together. He showed them to me when I interviewed him back a few years ago. I'll be happy to send you his address if you'd like to talk with him sometime.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
You know, and I know his name from the you know,
the traditional list.
Listserv, yeah.
Yes.
You know, and Bill Heyman had sent me, I had written him an email not too long ago, asking him what callers might have actual film footage of club dancing in the 50s, and I haven't had a chance to get in touch with those people yet, but there's surprisingly little that I've seen.
Yes.
seen that video back then, but it surprises me that more people didn't pull out their 16-millimeter camera and take some film.
Right.
Have you seen a lot of stuff?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen stuff like that?
No, not very much, really. We had one come through the archive here not too long ago from Connecticut or somewhere in New England. I'll research it and get back to you on that. This was actually taken at dances that he was calling and showed the dancers and showed glimpses of him and the band and so forth. And he is very proud of this every Saturday night dance that's been going on for a zillion years, you know.
Now, who was that?
The name escapes me at the moment. I think it's Bob Prentice, but I'm not sure. But I'll get back to you on that.
Sure.
Okay. The other one that I think did some things in film, with film anyway, is Ernie Kinney in California. I interviewed him several years ago. He's been prominent in modern Western, and I guess he was close to the Hollywood area or whatever, and that may be how he got into it.
Yeah.
But, of course, Les Gotcher was, he was a stuntman. He used to stand in for Clark Gable.
I was very fortunate. I had a chance to talk with him for about 3-4 hours.
Could you?
A year before he died.
Huh.
And it was just a great moment for me to just talk to him about his life.
Were you in Hawaii then?
No, I wasn't. You know, I tracked him down. I got tired of reading all these kind of accounts in old books about what Lloyd Shaw was saying about Les and what Frank Smith was saying about Lloyd. And I just was curious what really happened.
Yeah.
And I tracked him down and had a great conversation with him. You know,
oh, that's great.
That was just before I guess he published his autobiography. I can't remember what it was called.
It's too bad you didn't tape it.
You know, I wish that I had.
Yeah.
But, talked a lot about the early days of hash calling and
right.
the politics of
square
dance calling back then. You know, it was such a big business and so many guys were making a living at it that
sure.
I don't need to tell you what it became. You know, it just really had a really accelerated evolution as far as I could tell.
Yes. So, well, you're still busy now anyway, still calling dances and now you're growing a family.
Oh, yeah, well, I have two girls. I have a 10-year-old and a almost 20-year-old.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I have a family. And I play music right now more than I call dances.
Uh-huh.
It's just very satisfying, and I play in a couple bands. But I did just get back from calling for 3 weeks in Europe. I think we emailed about that a little bit.
Yes.
And as I mentioned to you, one of the highlights was getting together with Ricky Holden for the first time.
That's right, yes.
One of the reasons that was fun, and I didn't have a chance to tell Ricky this, but in the mid-1980s, I spent a lot of time with Ted Sinella.
Oh, yes.
And the first time I met Ted Sinella was actually we were in California together, both calling at the Mendocino Woodlands Dance Week. And Ted and his wife, Jean, came up to me and told me that they thought my calling reminded them of Ricky Holden's calling.
Oh, yeah.
And at that time, I'd never heard a recording of Ricky.
Ah.
So it was just, and then I learned that Ted and Ricky went to college together. But so that made me and Ricky even more, you know, meaningful because I had a lot of respect for Ted.
Yes, so sure.
So it was great to meet Ricky and
Bill. Yeah, I knew Ted quite well. I used to be on the executive board of the New England Folk Festival years ago, and Ted was very active, of course. Getting away from square dancing a little bit, do you have any other hobbies?
Playing music. but just playing music and spending time with my daughters.
Right. Yeah. One question I've been asking other callers, do you have any regrets? Is there anything you think you might have changed if you're looking back?
About square dancing?
Yeah, about dancing in general, the way you went at it and so forth.
You know, what I did that I wished I had looked for callers who were in the generation or two before me earlier. You know, I spent my first years calling, learning from, I guess, what I'd call near peers, you know, guys who had been calling just a couple years before me. And it wasn't until I really sought out older callers that I realized that I think I finally said, oh, now I get it. And my regret is I wish I had realized that earlier. You know, one thing I did in, it was in 1987. I had moved to Baltimore and just lived two blocks away from Bob Dousmer. I know you talked to him a week or two ago.
Yes.
And we were neighbors, and we both went to go see Marshall Filippo, who would come to Baltimore every year.
Right.
And Bob danced, and I videotaped.
Okay.
It was just such a pleasure to watch someone do what Marshall does as well as he does it.
Yes.
For as long as he does. It was just such a pleasure. And I just said, boy, I wish I had found that kind of wealth of that earlier. You know,
right.
One guy who I would have, you know, died to have met was Joe Lewis. I had so much respect for for his recording.
Yes.
And what he wrote. I collected a lot of, he published an old newsletter.
Yes.
So to me, I guess I just have a lot of reverence for where this stuff comes from.
Right.
And my only regret is that I was too late. I think I was born about two decades too late. I think I should have been born in about 1930.
I see. Yeah. Well, you've been doing okay for yourself. And it looks like you're holding up the tradition and so forth.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yes.
You know, right, it seems that it's interesting because for a lot of years, I ended up calling mostly for what today you'd call contra dancers.
Yes.
I think when I met you, when I saw you in Albuquerque, was kind of at a contra dance.
Yes.
That I was calling. I've just lost interest in doing that.
Uh-huh.
And right now, I find myself, the dances I call are community dances. I'm much more interested now in calling, not for dancers, but just for people who want to dance.
Right.
People who would never call themselves dancers.
Right.
Whether they call themselves square dancers or, contra dancers.
Yes.
Calling it community festivals, calling it churches, calling it... this fall, it seems, the band I play with, we just ended up playing at a lot of public schools. PTAs having dances evening for parents, kids, and teachers.
Right.
And right now, they're my favorite things to do.
Well, that's great. So, I think, unless you think of anything else, I think we pretty well covered things.
Yeah. I just love this project that you're doing.
Yeah, well, it's been very ambitious. I've made over 90 interviews now.
Well, I was going to guess that you must have near 100, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with them?
Well, I'm gradually getting them transcribed. I just finished transcribing Bob Howell from Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And you must know him.
Just by name.
Yes, okay. Well, he's a great guy, but... and I'm just plugging along. Every once in a while, I pick up an interview or two. I interviewed Bob Dulcimer last week, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a million guys out there that I could talk to, and I'd like to. It's just that I'm kind of confined to my little apartment here in Albuquerque at the moment. But are you coming down this way anywhere?
Don't have any plans right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure.